turbulent.
Commentators would disagree
that not enough people are speaking about the things that you and I are speaking of. You know, like being homeless after being a feminist at some point in your life, right? Or politically homeless, like all these, like, you know, bandwagons. And
that they have, and the problem with that is that they love that about you, and they resent it about you at the same time.
100%, right?
Yeah.
Don't have to. You can fucking figure it out on your fucking own. And that's the like, and they didn't have to tell me. Right?
I don't get it. I don't understand why people take others for granted. And I certainly don't understand why they can't at least say something and have some respect for their time. Like,
And before we jump into the official episode today at Fearless Well, I just want to point out this is hashtag Team No Delusion. So everything you'll see, intro, mid-tro, intro, recording, everything is raw footage, one take. I will not be doing or redoing or participating in the whole Hollywood thing where everything needs to look polished or fake or perfect, because that's just not real life. So with that being said, welcome into the real world and our joke. Oh, hi everyone, this is Fearless Wealth with the Demons and Diamonds, Diamonds and Demons series. And still not, I don't have my own official studio yet, so I'm kind of like winging it where I am recording. But let's first start. How are you, Kelly? What's new?
Fine.
What's life?
Nothing much is happening, which is kind of nice for me. Anytime something is more eventful, that's when I get nervous.
We like the balance.
That's right. We like the stasis. And the excitement that I wanted was back in my 20s. I don't need that anymore. I'm good. I'm all set.
And I'm back. I have no idea what happened.
Yeah, you just froze.
Oh, I froze? Because
yeah.
The whole screen disappeared, like my whole browser disappeared, which I've never seen before.
Oh.
Where did we cut out?
You asked me a question. You were about to ask me a question.
Yes. So, I specifically want to be cautious with how I word this. Would you consider yourself coming from a, pick whatever word fits, if any, a turbulent, chaotic, perhaps unbalanced background, like childhood?
Relatively speaking, probably not. I would say that by and large, my childhood was fairly stable. There would be a few things that I would flag as I deliberately made effort to avoid repeating. But I would also say that considering where my parents came from, they did a remarkable job overcoming where they were from and making sure that they avoided the lion's share of their experience, because their experience was undoubtedly and undeniably fucked up. They were both brutally abused. They were both, you know, horribly neglected. I mean, they were physically, emotionally, in every way, like just both of them came from a horrible poverty, name it. Like, it was just all sorts of shit. So I was nowhere near that. But you could still see the vestiges of that kind of, you know, effect that it had on them. But knowing that about them, I found them to be incredibly tremendous people who overcame a lot and didn't let that shit roll downhill as much as it could have easily, right? So, and still there were still things, but like, by and large, by comparison, no way did I have a turbulent, bad childhood. My sisters would disagree, however.
Right. Right. And I specifically chose not to choose the word bad, because I do think that, and I'm just using a random example, like, if you, for example, had parents who traveled a lot, that's turbulent for sure, but it's not bad, right? Necessarily. So like, it could be chaotic, but it's not in a malicious intent or, you know, malicious circumstances.
Sure.
And, the reason why
So like, I was right. Okay with the fact that we moved every 2 years. My older sister and my little sister absolutely were not. So That's why I say they would disagree. You know, they were easily triggered by my dad's stoicism. I found it to be very peaceful and very reliable and very secure. Mm-hmm. So we interpreted our the same circumstances very differently. And so that's why I say that, you know, I mean, I did not internalize things the way they did at all. So I'm saying this knowing that my sisters would disagree tremendously with me on that one.
There's this, the classical, and I think I've mentioned it in one of our prior episodes, there's this classical psychology example of two, you know, twin brothers who one gets absolutely, you know, becomes jail criminal, et cetera, prison. And the other one becomes a successful business and a great dad. And they ask, both of them, like, why, how do you think you became like this? Why did you, right? And they both say, well, what do you think with a father like mine? And they both internalize their father completely differently. The origin of my question is because I feel like I'm in a life cycle. I don't know what to subscribe it to, but like there's a shedding of old layers, there's shedding of old patterns. And one thing that absolutely comes up is that not enough people are speaking about the things that you and I are speaking of. You know, like being homeless after being a feminist at some point in your life, right? Or politically homeless, like all these, like, you know, bandwagons. And one of the thing is that definitely coming from a mega turbulent and even bad childhood, probably. Yeah, I'm safe to say that. I had, during my teenager puberty years, right? I've been living on my own since I was 15. I would definitely seek out unbalanced circumstances, high adrenaline, which that would translate into a survival mode for me. And I remember then getting into my early 20s and having to completely rewire and rewrite what it means when things are calm, right? Mm-hmm. And then at first, in my first, I would say, semi-healthy relationship where it was calm, I would be like, no, this is not good. And I would stir shit up, right? Because I'm used to the nervous system being on fucking fire. Yeah. And now I'm at a point, just like you say, when nothing is happening. I'm like, and the excitement is I'm getting like a new juicer. Like I'm really fucking excited. Yes. Like I'm legit excited about that.
Yeah, you have no idea the thrill I got buying 3 new ceiling fans.
Oh my God, tell me about it. I love that. Tell me.
We moved into our house and like the ceiling fans that we had were doing this action here. And it looked like, and it hung so low.
For the listeners, Kelly's making a wobbly gesture with her hands.
Yes. Yeah. And so it was, you know, they were wobbling and they were hanging way too low for an 8-foot ceiling, which is fine if you're us and you're 5'3", 5'4", but if you're anything taller than that, you're about to get decapitated. So we got new ceiling fans and we found these beautiful like three propeller like large ceiling fans that look just so nice with the remote control and all that stuff. And I was like, this is so beautiful. And it's, you know, so nice and tight with the ceiling and it looks, you know, streamlined and matches and it was just the best. And I was like, this is awesome. I found matching tile and I lost my mind. Like, oh, like, you know, like I love tile. Mm-hmm. Like my tile is awesome now, my backsplash. And like,
I love that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point about what you were saying about looking for turbulence, right? Because that's where you felt most at home or that's what you associated with it. I got into a similar discussion with somebody who was saying, you know, the original post that he had said was something to the effect of, you know, sensitivity is strength. It's what we use. Sometimes that's how we cope and how we defend ourselves in abusive situations. And I said, you know, the bottom line of that was, I said, whatever you need to do to survive a situation, you do it. That's it.
Yes.
Right. If it means lashing out, getting angry, throwing fists, you know,
pretending to be submissive, whatever.
I don't care what the fuck it is. Whatever it is you had to do to get through a situation is what you had to do, and that's it. I said, I don't judge how people get through a situation. Okay. Where I start to say something is when the dust has settled, right? And you were a kid, you did what you had to do, that's survival mode, and I get it. But when you get out of the situation, if you don't know how to turn it off, right? And everybody gets still is being treated as if you're still living in that traumatic situation, that's on you. I said, that's not on me, random person on the street or the clerk at the store who used the wrong term and set your ass off. That's not me. That's you. Okay. So do what you got to do to survive a situation, but recognize the difference between what you did to get through it and survive versus everyday situations that don't require a full survival mode of fight or flight all the time, heightened. And also
reactive.
Yeah. Rein in the desire to create that sort of turbulence for yourself so that you feel justified in being constantly heightened.
Right. And we always, like, even though I have like very clear points that we still need to talk about, and we will cycle back to that. I think you make, this is such an important point, because I feel from all the things that people say, like, there's not enough talk about this. I feel this is one of them, where you transition, or where you ought to transition from any type of survival mode versus to a healthy, calm, regulated nervous system. Because the thing is, when you come from a turbulent background, whether it's childhood, former relationship, career, right? Like let's not disregard career if you're like in a high competitive or high stressful environment, and then you find yourself in calm grounds, campgrounds, that feels unsafe, right? The thing is, what happens in you, in your psyche, and I remember this so vividly, and I am grateful that I have all my journals where I would write about it. I'm like, everything is calm, and I would perceive that this is the eye of the storm, or this is the pre-tornado, right? Where the things get, pre the tsunami, everything gets quiet. And it's all in my experience. Nothing actually shows the signs that turbulence is coming. I'm anticipating it, and not only anticipating it, I'm creating it now, right? So in this case, boyfriend was calm, and I'm like, oh, you must be fucking cheating. I'm fucking whatever petty shit, right? Yeah. Well, like, this is, you don't love me anymore. Where's our passion? Like, absolutely batshit crazy stuff. Whereas, because I didn't know calm. Right. So, learning to hold that tension of transition in your body, where you perhaps rationally at least know that, okay, this is not working, but there's no new system, and there's no new program yet, right? So you're kind of like in this in-between where you are ready to shed the old skin, but you don't have a new skin yet. So you're kind of like, okay, I feel very naked. Because there's no modus operandi yet. Like, but it's so fucking important to recognize, if you want any type of success, if you want any type of peace, like, money is fun, don't get me wrong. Monetary wealth is absolutely necessary and fun and pleasurable, but it does not create a calm nervous system. That's our job, regardless of where we are in the financial scale, right? Or where we are in economy, or where whatever country we're in. Yeah. So I feel like we are absolutely, while I feel that the modern West has created these weak generations and leftovers that we talk about ad nauseum, that would absolutely benefit from having some extra turbulence in life, just to at least in a naturally way, you know, create resilience. The opposite is true, where you come from environments that required a lot of resilience, what the comeback from that is.
Yeah, I think it's whatever was normalized for you, which means that, you know, if you had a situation where your parents were doing everything for you, cutting your eggs and helicoptering over you at all times and stuff, and you never really had to take any responsibility for anything, that's just as tumultuous on the other side of that in adulthood as a person who was brought up in a constantly heightened and abusive situation, right? So because you're not
both extremes.
Exactly. You are ill prepared for how the world really is, because those are both acts of fiction. Those are all actual fictitious scenarios. Not saying that it didn't happen to you. I'm saying that outside of that small microcosm that you live in, that's not the rest of the world. You know, everybody's not abusive, right? Like, come on. There wouldn't be a civilization. You wouldn't have half the shit you have if we weren't able to at least get past our differences long enough to make a building. So, you know, that's not a thing. Like, not every relationship is abusive. Not every relationship has people doing everything for you, right? So that's not real. What's real is that there's a certain amount of self-sufficiency that people have to build up, sure, right? And then there's a certain amount of caring that we need that doesn't kind of broach on our self-sufficiency. So but rather complements it, right? So for example, I was taught to wash the dishes, right? But when I was first taught to wash the dishes, my mom said, "I'll wash you dry." Okay, now we're going to switch, right? And so I'm learning to wash this. And then it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to be home. I have a late meeting. I need you to do both. Okay. You know, and it's okay. No one loses their shit because I've been doing this back and forth with my mom this whole time. And now we're okay. I can do it myself. And that was on purpose. My mom probably swung by my grandma's a few times and said it was a meeting and she wasn't going to be home just so that I could handle it and see that I could handle it, right? And so you're rationed out that kind of thing. My dad, you know, was like, my dad let me fall down all the time, right? But because of those things, what my idea of normal was that, yeah, sometimes you're going to fall down. Sometimes you're going to break a thing. Sometimes you're going to fail. And that's okay. You know, and that kind of grit builds up in you because it's like, of course, that's fine. That's normal. You know, it's normal that things go wrong. It's also normal that somebody's supportive of you when you do fail. So they're defining what normal is for you as a kid in your formative years. And if you have to reconstruct normal, right, in the case of recovering from a very abusive childhood, or even, you know, just constantly heightened situations, if you have to reconstruct normal so that you can ultimately find peace, then that's what you have to do. And that's going to start with, I think, to your point, intellectually recognizing it first, because that's the easiest one to rationalize with, right? Your intellectual side, not your emotional side, is the one that's going to say, this is what makes the most sense. This makes sense for us. We can, you know, not getting pissed all the time, not crying all the time, not being offended all the time really makes sense to me. And I really want that. Intellectually, I want that. Now I need to convince myself emotionally that this is the way. And I need my intellectual side to kind of rein in some of the emotional runaway freight train shit that I'm capable of, right? Saying, okay, just because someone else conditioned you to respond this way, that's not a moral imperative that you continue that. It hasn't served you at all. You need to start behaving in a way that serves you. And sometimes the way you serve you is in the way in which you respond to things. And you need to start finding a better response, because I can't keep coming undone every fucking time. You know, if you think about your mind being an entity and you're talking to yourself and having that inner monologue, I can't keep coming undone and re-knitting the sweater every fucking time somebody says anything. Like, we can't do this. This is not tenable. So we got to do something else. When somebody treats you well, and that is a new thing for you, right, and they are consistent with it, right, I think it's time that you know, that when you're on the receiving end of that, to say, I need to seek more of this, more, not just the treatment, but also the consistency of said treatment. I like the combination of the two, you know? I like that combination of being treated well and always being treated well. Even when things are stressful, I'm still treated well through it, you know?
Right. And what absolutely like hooks me in the mind right now is that I feel that hopefully we at all point at least get to the rational aspect, the intellectual aspect of like what perhaps healthy environments, nourishing environments, friendships, dynamic and romantic relationships should be like in theory. Mm-hmm. However, when you come from using turbulent background, mm-hmm. you probably tend to seek turbulent people. And then once you have that, like the intellectual realization, at least, you then get into this weird crux where you're something in you expects the healthy treatment from the unhealthy person in front of you, mm-hmm. right? And there's a very, and then you get into this, like, I'm not deserving enough, or see, it's not for me, right? Because now you're basically perpetuating the bias that you had of like the turbulent circumstances, right. Instead of like, and I think the AAA, which one is it? The AAA, the Alcoholic Anonymous, they say you can't expect to get milk at an alcohol store or whatever their version of it is, like, right? So you can't expect healthy behavior from unhealthy people, which tends to, I think almost everyone who I've talked to about in my life is where they've like, at one point where like, clearly my life and my nervous system isn't working. And then they mm-hmm. kind of expected that the surroundings they had found themselves in, that because they had the realization that the surroundings would adapt, right? And then you get this weird like internal conflict where you rationally have an idea of what healthy dynamics should look like, but you're not being met with it in the reality because you're surrounded, right? You still have the old turbulent people around you, and there's a complete shedding of that environment, which the perhaps transitioning period or the solitude that requires is known everything, right? When you become from an employee to an entrepreneur, when you move to a new town, when you move in, you know, when you grow into a new life phase, from maiden to mother, from party person to mother, right? Like these are all transitional phases where there's holding of the line required, knowing that it's uncomfortable because the new skin isn't there yet.
I think there, okay, so two things came up. And the first was somebody had made a comment about, you know, how, women are defining what real men are, or something to that effect. And I chimed in and said, no, but I will say there were things I knew I didn't like, right? There were definitely things I could easily tell you all the things I don't like, you know, based on just experiences, right? Say, oh, I don't like being treated this way. I don't like this. I don't like that. I said, I knew negatively what a real man wasn't, but I don't know that I necessarily knew what a real man was until Chris put his definition out there by living it. He didn't tell me, he just lived it, right? And I loved it so much that I adopted that definition for myself. And I accepted his definition that he put out there, right? Which is unique because it's his, right? And your guy does the same, right? I can tell. So I said he defined what a real man was for me, and I adopted that and said yes. I said the interesting part of this, I dare say, is that that's part of being a real man, is that you have a definition to offer in the first place that Oof. Women admire.
Oof.
That's it.
I'm for the listeners. Men right. For the list. Oh. Yeah. For the listeners, I'm holding my heart here. This is so deep and profound. Oh.
Real, right? Real. Mm. The second piece that comes from what you were saying is that somebody had said something like, if you have to keep telling people over and over and over repeatedly that not to disrespect you and they keep doing it, they don't care about you, right? And I said, that's true. But if you're sticking around to tell them over and over and over again, I have to question whether you care about you. It's one thing, one or two times something happens, fine. But you've now said repeatedly, this is a pattern, you keep going back to it. I have to wonder if you care about you and whether or not you condition them to say, really, it's okay. There's no consequences to me treating you this way. This is not real disrespect.
Yeah. And I am beyond blessed to be surrounded with people like yourself, you know, with integrity, with a backbone, who have at least an overlap of similar values, and we value the weight of words, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that valuing the weight of words also means not using them lightly, right? And the traditional example that we've touched on priorly, I've recently had a good friend of mine break up with me because she got into a cycle with her boyfriend for several years, and they would go into the, oh, it's we're really broken up right now. And then 2 weeks they were the love of each other's lives again. And then 2 weeks later, we're broken up right now. And it brings up the interesting and almost like the hardship of the integrity and backbone, because they're not easy, right? They're not pleasant always. That if you are willing to throw certain words out there, you better be willing to back them up.
Correct.
And I believe, almost aside from the external effect that, you know, what other people will think of you if you don't pull through, I think it has a detrimental effect on your self-esteem, self-trust, and how you view yourself. The moment your word doesn't mean anything anymore to you, you've lost.
Right. That's right. Don't just talk about it, be about it. I mean, you've got to be able to follow it up with action. If you're not, then shut the fuck up. Shut up. You're just nagging. You are just nagging. I mean, that's all it is you're just nagging. If you're not willing to back it up. And look, that doesn't mean you have to jump from, you know, I mean, the consequences, of course, can be incremental, right? Like, and they don't have to be extreme, but they do have to make the point. That's like, I'm not, like, I've gotten into arguments where I'm like, I'm not staying in this room with you. I'm leaving the room now because I'm not doing this. I don't play games like this. I don't do this. I'm leaving. And I've walked out of the room. That's it. I didn't have to throw hands. I'm not yelling. I don't get into that. And I've gotten, you know, and it's elevated to various places where I'm just like, we're done. Now we're just done. Okay. And I need you to leave me alone. And that's it. Like, there's varying degrees to which you will tolerate or not tolerate a certain thing. And there has to be some measure of a follow through that says, you know, I've said no to this. And the reason I said no is because I don't tolerate this shit. And my intolerance will be reflected first in a warning and then in action and then in some sort of final termination. Like, that's three steps, right? That's not me just blowing smoke up your ass. I mean it. And so I think there has to be that discipline, because what we allow is what we train others to do. You don't get away from that. So, I mean, I see a lot of people talking about, I don't deserve to be treated this poorly. I don't understand why I keep attracting losers. Ah, la, 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 la. And it's like, don't you though? Have you ever, like, I understand that their behavior sucks, but I really have to ask what the fuck you're doing that draws that in and says that's okay. And yes, I'm the type of person that puts up with this shit. Like, something went out. You sent a message. And if you don't know what that message is, you should probably spend some time alone. and reflect on yourself a bit, you know, like, what are you putting out there exactly, you know?
Well, and this comes back to, this becomes a somewhat complex, multifaceted layer of conversation where I know there are people who are abusive to their partner, but they're like fucking angels around me. Because ain't nobody fucking treating me no type of way. I will fucking come for your head. If you ever even would make it that far, right? So people, there's absolutely, it's not a set in stone characteristics. Like, people become, have different dynamics depending on what the other person is willing to tolerate and accept.
And I have to question a person like that, because I've met people like that, right? Mm-hmm. I've told people, mm-hmm. I've been in interviews, like, just for work, right? That's not mm-hmm. even, I mean, it's work. And I've been in interviews and I said, look, I have been accused of being incredibly dispassionate and lacking in enthusiasm, you know? And I said, the thing is that I'm this way when the good news comes, but I'm also this way when the bad news comes. Mm-hmm. I said, and the thing is that when shit hits the fan, I'm the friend people come to. I'm the one who drops her shit, gets in a van, picks your ass up in the middle of the desert, no questions asked. I'm on my way. And that's it. Where do you want to bury the bodies? What are we doing? What's the deal? You know, do we need a plan? I'll make a plan. You know, I'm that person and I still have a level head. I said, so at the end of the day, do you want a cheerleader or do you want somebody with a level fucking head? Okay. And that's who I am. And I know that for better or for worse. And to some people that is very off-putting because they want somebody who's like, you know, all the things, and I don't feel all the things and I don't get like that. And, you know, and to some people, it is very off-putting. But I think the people who can who do actually kind of change who they are depending on what they're talking about, who they're talking about, and who they're talking to. That sounds like some sort of personality disorder to me. If you're getting mad when you talk about some, when you're talking about yourself and you're getting very defensive, right? And then when you talk about others, you start to cry and get very victim-y. Mm-hmm. I've heard that those conversations.
Yeah.
I've heard them in the same conversation, not separately, by the same person. I've heard it where they will cry when they're talking about somebody else and what they did to them. And then when it's time to talk about themselves, they get very defensive, cold, the waterworks turn off immediately. And I've seen that. I've seen people talk differently around me than they do around men. I've seen people talk differently around me than they do around other friends. And so my question is who the fuck are you?
'Cause 100. Absolutely.
I don't know who you are, but I know you're playing me. And the thing is when they're around somebody that is successful, well-adjusted, has a lot of things going for them, you know, and has a general stability, that is an envy that they have. And the problem with that is that they love that about you and they resent it about you at the same time.
100%.
Right? And so they keep you near because you're the closest thing that they're ever going to get to
proximity.
Like that, yeah. Right. But they're not going to ever really be like you or try to emulate you in any significant way. They're just going to cater to you to keep you around. And so for me, that kind of person, I'm more concerned about than the person who just says, I fucking hate you. Well, you hate me. I know who you are. You know, you're honest. So fuck it. Yeah. Help yourself. Just don't, you know, keep your hands to yourself. Whatever. But like the person who's like, who's doing that, and they're different around men. I've had a roommate like that, and I watched that shit, and I was like, there's something about her where she is playing everybody off of everybody else, and she's got way too much mental bandwidth to fuck around like that. I'm like, I don't have the fucking mental bandwidth to keep up with the amount of lies and stories and personalities.
Right. No, 100.
I don't. I'm the worst. I'm just like, this is it. If you don't like it, that's unfortunate, but I can't make you like it because I can't make you like me. I can't be someone other than this. This is it. I have one setting, awake, and then I have one that's asleep, and that's it. So if you don't like either of those, I don't have to tell you the shop is bare, you know, but like you've got a full shelf of different personalities to pick from depending on the person you're talking to. I don't know. That to me, that gives like weird toxic
schizo vibes.
Envy. Yeah, it does. It does.
I pride myself in having, let me say it differently. I told one of my old school, like from elementary school friends, like, I've always had always amazing people around me. She's like, did you know? Did you forget about... and I'm like, oh, I kind of forgot about those, but not because they didn't make an impact on me, but they were of the envy kind. And I remember becoming, famous in one industry by lack of better wording. And the extrovert that I am, I know everyone within a week. And this girl who's been trying to get into the industry being really upset about it and actually, you know, starting bad-mouthing me. I'm like, what's up? And I'm even still like, yo, what's up? Like, what's going on? And she's like, I fucking hate you for the fact that everyone loves you. You seem to have a flow and everyone just eats out of your hand. I'm like, but I'm not trying to have everyone eat out of my hand. I don't want anything from this industry. And I had just recently had this in America happen, which I forgot that these people exist because once you're a certain type of way, they tend to not be drawn to you or not get close. But it was the same. I hate you for I have a lot of negative resentment to you because of how flowy and easy your life is and how magnetic you are. And I'm like, I don't think I even know how to respond to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's, you know, and to the thing is part of it is that they don't know what goes into it. So they don't understand the part where it's like they're only looking at the stuff online.
The shiny.
Right. They're not looking at the work. They're not looking at the struggle. They're not looking at the history. They're not looking at all the shit that came before it. They're not looking at the discipline. They're not looking at any of that. They only see the outcome, right?
The result.
They see, you know, I mean, that's like looking at Harrison Ford and forgetting the part where he was a carpenter.
Right. Or looking at a bodybuilder and being like, oh, they like work out 6 hours a day.
Right. But the days when he was a nerd and he was totally scrawny and, you know, nobody remembers that part. And it's like, and so it's like they see it. They want that. They envy that. They don't want it. If they wanted it, they would have just gone and gotten it. But they didn't. So I think saying they wanted is even wrong. If they wanted it at all, they wanted it to be given to them. Right. They want somebody to be able to give that to them and give them the quick and easy way out. I've seen so many people look for these silver bullet solutions to all sorts of shit. And I said, there isn't one. There isn't one for your money. There isn't one for your emotions. There isn't one for working through a problem. There are just layers and layers of different steps you're going to take. And that's it. And I don't understand the people who sit there and say, you just have it really easy. And it's like,
yes.
You think I have it easy because I don't have your problems. But if you had a day with my problems, you'd fail and be right where you are, if not worse. So,
100%.
You can't handle my problems.
Right.
You can't. They're first world problems. I have no problem acknowledging that. But just because they're first world problems doesn't mean they aren't problems.
And you need to grow into them.
That's correct. And just
because you need to grow,
doesn't experience them, doesn't mean that they're not problems.
Yeah. Right?
And it's like, you know, I've told people this before. I'm like, you know, because I, especially when it comes to people who complain about their employer making a lot of money, or you know, or you know, it's like the bosses are always, and the owners are always making all this money, and they don't do all the work. I said, you wouldn't be able to run this business for 5 fucking minutes without running it into the ground. You'd crash this motherfucker faster than this guy could wake up and get out of bed to save it. I'm like, no, you don't know. You don't fucking know. He's like, you know, well, we're only getting paid this. I'm like, you're only getting paid that. But the cost to have you as an employee includes this and this and this and this and this. You can't even afford to look at his electric bill. Okay. I'm like, you can't, to run this company, to open the doors that you, so that you can come in, the amount of money he put down for that fucking machine you work on, the amount of electricity it takes. I said, the amount of, it costs more per month to keep the lights on than it does to pay you and 3 other people. Just, and the lights are just being the lights.
Right.
They have one fucking job. Okay. Like,
right.
I'm like, and you're sitting here complaining about the fact that you don't make as much as he does. You don't do what he does. You don't take the risk that he does. You don't invest as he does. When you fuck up, who pays for the fuck up? Does that come out of your paycheck or does it come out of his? It comes out of his. So please stop pretending like you're somehow entitled because you can make the widgets. The thing is the people who can make the widgets are in greater supply than the person who can run the widget shop.
There we go. Spoken like a true capitalist. I love it. I love it. Hashtag capitalism is the bomb.
I mean, until you can find another way, I'm listening. But you telling me that the worker should own it. I said, you don't have the experience of running a business. You have no idea how to run a business. You know how to run a machine. And they're very different things. And
what?
To be fair, that owner would never be able to run that floor the way you do.
But he knows. Let us all take pride in that.
Yeah.
That we can do.
Yes. And that all the talent is being distributed where it belongs rather than just everybody just getting this even layer of mediocrity, you know? And I hear people, but that's the kind of envy that you see. What difference does it make whether you're talking about the relationship between a boss and an employee or between two friends? If it's envy based rather than ambition based or growth based, you're going to have the same outcome, that same sour, you know, and when you're sour about
your job, aftertaste.
You don't, your ethic sucks too. And so your ethic toward work will suck in the same way your ethic toward a friendship will suck if it's based solely on envy. And those, I mean, there's thirsty bitches everywhere though. I mean, especially if you're on social media, that's inevitable, right? You're going to attract a lot of people, you know, flies like honey just as much as bees. and you know, and you're going to get both, you know, and the thing, the real work is going to be making sure that the flies don't get too close to the hive, right? Like that's the main
Absolutely.
Thing. So
I love it. I love it. Again, capitalism is bomb and the market tells everything. One of the original points that I wanted to bring up is I made a status on my Facebook a week ago by now, how I think it's attractive when seeing men open the door for their women, right? Yeah. And in my comments, everyone was sharing like, oh yeah, it's beautiful. I love it when I see someone do it, or when my husband do it, or my partner does it. And the men were like, I tried to do that. You know, right? Like everyone was sharing the same appreciative sentiment. Yeah. And then somehow I went viral among angry people Facebook.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
And them out from under the bridge.
I don't even know how they found me, right? So it started with one angry person sharing my book, and then it became in screenshots. And again, I've seen it plastered all over now. Mm-hmm. But comments that were shared, aside from dozens of personal insults, which was interesting because it was targeted towards the way I look, for one. Second, for my grammar being Americanly incorrect, right? Which makes sense because my fourth language. Mm-hmm. But on a substantial level, it was how sad I am that I think this is good, or that, you know, that this is the norm, or this should be the norm. How sad do I think that this is goals? Mm-hmm. How pathetic I am for expressing like the normal things, right? And it was such a wild ride. Now, I will never stop the opportunity to express that I only accept insults from people that are above my tax bracket. So the insult just wash away, right? Like, I don't fucking care about that. They're all broke. But the other parts were definitely interesting, how there was an entitlement to, first of all, saying something that I didn't, right? They're making all arguments that I didn't make. Nowhere do I speak of this as goals. Nowhere do I say like this is the bare minimum. So they're arguing against the point I didn't make, for one. Mm-hmm. But the vindictive, I think vindictive is the English word, and the tenacious energy towards me appreciating something, right, that they consider to be normal, and this is the bare minimum, and there's some entitlement, there's an ugly entitlement to it. That was shocking.
This goes back to what we were saying earlier about getting excited about ceiling fans, right, and tile, and getting excited about the little things, right? It's the entitlement is really them lacking any sense of appreciation and looking for major thrills and charges to their adrenaline and charges to their dopamine, right? This no longer excites me. I'm not excited enough. It's almost like, you know, like a porn addiction. It's no longer enough that this is it. It's got to get heavier. It's got to get more. It's got to be more intense, more violent, more this, more that. It has to be more heightened. They're looking for that heightenedness, and they're not finding it in that comment. And so it hit really flat for them. So I have to wonder whether or not they're coming from a place where it's like they're used to a lot of honeymoon phases and no real relationship, right? They're used to 3 weeks, 3 months, or, you know, this constant like dating, 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 but never really in a relationship with someone for any period of time, where they had to actually settle down, you know, and get their expectations lined up to the more mundane day-to-day life. And the thing is that I look forward to, you know, to binge watching Supernatural with Chris. I look forward to cooking with him. I look forward to grocery shopping with him. And every fucking week, I look forward to it. And I wouldn't want to do that with anyone else, but what makes it special is that he does that with me. It's not that grocery shopping is unto itself phenomenal, right? It's that that's our thing, right? And the same with like holding the door. It's because he did it for me. It's because this person thought of me. It's because of the gesture, and I'm taking that in and appreciating it. And so you're walking through the forest and sniffing every flower, and they're bulldozing through the forest looking for a clearing. and they're like, where's the forest? Well, the forest keeps knocking down because you keep bulldozing through it. You would appreciate it more if you took your time and walked through it, but you're so busy trying to get to the destination, you're not experiencing the journey at all. And that's unfortunate for you, but you can see it in their haste, you know, and in their disappointment, because that's what it is. They're disappointed. They're disappointed because they had expectations and it's like, no, it's supposed to be like this. Right. But is it?
No, and one comment that I made, because I wrote about this situation happening, which elicited a lot of great conversations. Mm-hmm. I am at a point where chivalry, kindness, I'm absolutely viewing that as a privilege. It's not the bare minimum. It's not an expectation. Right. I'm being gifted something, right? Yeah. And this goes past romantic relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Seeing people be nice to each other, seeing, and for those who have me on social media, y'all have seen me cry publicly when someone, you know, drives towards me and signals me that there's cops. Like, I feel that so deeply. Like, oh my God, these people are taking, like, they're watching out for me. Right. They didn't have to.
They don't even know who you are. Right.
There's no face to me. I'm just someone in the car, right? And this week, and traffic for me is a huge example of that, and how I want to show up in traffic myself. So I'm right now living in fucking absolutely rural redneck land, right? When there's rain, there's rock slides. And so we've been having some kind of like big weather going on. And I'm driving home and someone signals me and I instantly know this is not cops because it's in the middle of the night, right? Mm-hmm. Signals me and I'm like, okay, that means whatever, I don't even know what's going on. I'm slowing down, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm slowing down and right around that corner, there's dozens of rocks on the road, right? And I have to slowly at like a 5 mile per hour, like navigate around it. Yeah. So there's the rock mountain, and I get out of that area and a car comes my way. So I signal, right?
Yeah.
Don't have to. You can fucking figure it out on your fucking own. And that's and they didn't have to tell me.
Right.
Right? But they did.
Correct.
They did. Oh my God. I do not have enough love and appreciation in wording to express how deep that hits.
Yes, because that's who they are. You know that there's a person in the world where that's just who they are to everyone because they didn't wait to see if it was you first, right? Do I know them? Because if I know them, I'll let them know. Right? They didn't qualify their kindness. They are naturally this way, and they'll do it to a faceless stranger behind the wheel of a car I can barely see at night, right?
It's expression of character, right? It's expression of integrity.
Yes. Oh my! But that's in the world. Yeah.
Right. I remember one time, and I don't even know why this came up, but my only bad relationship where there was infidelity. I had later met the woman who my former partner was cheating with, and her words were, "If I had knew you were such a great person, I would have never done that to you." And I'm like, I don't even know how to fucking respond to this. This is the weakest shit I have ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
And just cycling back to like, they don't even know who they don't even know who you are. They're just doing that because that's in their character, right? And it was just somehow like illustrating the contrast of...
Yeah. And then the person who says, I would have done differently had I known it was you, says to me that you're not usually this kind of person and that you're very conditional about basic kindnesses and gestures that cost you nothing. you know, like you're still stingy with things that don't cost you anything, which is really strange, you know, like, and not admirable at all. And almost makes me question, like, why the fuck are we friends again? Because I don't remember liking people like you. Like, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like, I don't remember saying, yeah, that's my shit, you know, like, I think, you know, you had said that you wanted to talk a bit about the, like, doing business and how, like, you know, and how difficult it is to do business with people. And I feel like, I think it stems, I think the same thing is true, right? Like, you don't have the ethic to show up. You don't have the ethic to follow through. And that goes for businesses and customers alike, you know, like, or clients, you know, it goes for both. And I'm not, and I think it goes further to your point of, like, it is a privilege then to be treated well in a world where people aren't treating each other very well, you know, like, I think it is now, it is this very special thing where it's like, I'll just hire the person who comes back the next day, you know, that's what you're seeing in a lot of these, you know, factories and stuff, where people will come in for interviews, they'll get hired, and then they don't show up the next day for work. And you're just like, what? You just got hired for a job, like, what the fuck happened, you know? And it's like, oh, well, you know, I had other things.
Yep.
And I'm like, and I've seen that with employees. I've seen that with employers, where it's like, you'll get all the way to the last two candidates of an interview. And then it's like, okay, we're going to make our decision by Friday. Friday comes and goes. You don't hear anything. Monday comes along and you just follow up. They're not emailing you back anymore. They just ghost you. And I'm just like, I don't know what to say about people who can't fire off an email. Like, you know, I don't know, or let people know they're not coming, or, like, you know, I don't get it. I don't understand why people take others for granted. And I certainly don't understand why they can't at least say something and have some respect for their time. Like, I've never understood that, you know, like, it goes in a loop for me, because there's no real rationale for it other than they felt like they're entitled to some level of understanding for why they did it, you know? And I'm just like, but why are you making commitments you can't follow through on and then getting really pissed off at the person you flaked on? Like, why are you getting that way? Like, you know, and they get angry. They get really angry when you call them out. And I'm just like, wait, I'm not the one who flaked though. I'm not the one who fucked up. You did. And it's like, and instead of sorry, what I got was a bunch of excuses. You know, and to me, that's like, it almost like it takes that person down several notches. And if they're representing a company, it takes that whole company down several notches. And it's like, and then it's like, eventually you have a lot of people operating in that low space of, like, basic decency cannot be expected from them. Like, basic follow through, basic correspondence, basic anything, courtesies cannot be expected from these people. And I'm like, who the fuck raised you? Like, holy shit, you know? Like, why are you thinking this is okay? Like, that's insane. And I don't know. I mean, you're in business in a different way, but you,
is it that? I'm seeing it just everywhere around me right now, where I end up doing business or giving my money to companies, even from a consumer perspective, right? Mm-hmm. Just if they call back, the bar is so low to being yes. successful that I, like, I'm not even finding luxury in making sure that I had got the most quality products. I'm just trying to obtain the products at this point. Yeah. Like, whoever is going to call me back or respond to my messages, like, gets the money. Like, at this point.
Yes, exactly.
And it was in Arizona when I was looking for ranches, you know, horse riding schools to start. I had contacted, I want to say 9 or 11, like, don't even pin me down. And only one responded back. So they ended up getting my money, like, my money, right? Like, I ended up going there every day. So
I don't even get it. Like, I get people get busy.
Sure.
But contractors for me has been a thing, right? Like, they're small businesses, and I get it, you know, like the handyman and whatever, they're small businesses and they're trying to, you know, they've got limited bandwidth. But I don't understand the part where if you've got somebody manning the phones or emails or messages from Facebook or whatever, you've got customers coming in and that's their job is to just deal with them and get them booked, that you wouldn't be able to just get them booked. Like, it's insane. It's insane. I've made appointments and they just don't show up. And I'm just like, you said you were showing up. Like, what? I don't even understand what. I said, I've literally been sitting here waiting. And they're like, oh, I called and left a message. I said, I never saw the call. There's no indication that you called. I get the message and it's all broken up because they have no reception. So I just hear the static. I don't know who it is. I said, I don't know. I got some staticky message from someone. Was that you? Were you not able to text me and just make sure I got words I could understand? I mean, you know, and so finally I got like what, like somebody was supposed to come and change my filters. And I was like, you know, my water filters. And I was like, okay, he's going to be there on this day between these hours. Okay, fine. Doesn't come. And then I get a call like afterwards saying, well, my appointment ran over. And I said, okay, does that mean you're not, that you're coming now? And the guy was like really put out, like, I guess I can if it's that urgent. And I was like, are you saying you're coming tomorrow? Like, what, you tell
me. What are you saying?
Can you tell me what you're doing?
Right, because I'm asking you as if it's a multiple question, like a multiple answer, like question, but I'm not, just trying to fill in the gaps at this point.
Like, is this, yeah, is it my job to just do predictive text now? Like, I don't understand what we're doing. Is this Facebook? Because, like, you know, I type in your first few words and then I just start going, like what are we doing? And it was like, I said, and he's like, well, it'd be better if I could just come tomorrow. I said, so you're rescheduling is what you're doing. And he goes, if that's okay. And I said, do I have a choice? I mean, I'm like, why are we negotiating this? I'm like, tell me what's going on. I said, you could have just called me and said, I'm not going to be able to make it. And you kind of knew that was true a while ago. You did. You knew that when you weren't leaving, when you thought you were leaving that job that you were on. And so the moment you realized you weren't going to be able to leave on time was the time you should have called. Right? Like it's impossible. Like, I can't believe it. And it's like my mom, bless her heart, she's from Japan. So customer service here is like, it sends her to a dark place. Like, she's just like, everybody should have mandatory training in Japan for how to treat customers. And I'm like, well, to be fair, customers in Japan also know how to be customers. I said, so everybody's been well conditioned to treat each other well when it comes to how you treat a customer and how you treat the clerk. I said, you know, considering you go to Japan, the CEO is asking the janitor how his family is, right? Knows him by name, greets him every morning, bows, uses honorific Japanese conjugations and asks about his family every time. Like, that's a thing. Like, you are never above that job. And the person who keeps that place clean is the person who keeps that place running, because that's still, you know, a vestige of Shinto where it's like cleanliness is next to godliness. And so we keep everything clean. And this person does that for us and keeps us respectable. So we all just be cool around the janitor, you know, and it's like, and the amount of respect that I've seen from people of pretty high status and a lot of money, how they treat their janitors is remarkable. Like, it leaves an indelible impression to somebody from the West where, you know, the janitor is never treated well here, you know? And it's like, they're dismissed. They don't even exist. They're hardly people. And it's like, and they're invisible by comparison. And it's like, that doesn't leave your head, because it's so such a contrast to what you're used to seeing, that like it shocks itself in your head,
you know? right absolutely.
It's true. And it's like, so I mean, it's such a contrast, you know. And then it's like, and what's funny is that like Americans will go to someplace like Paris and experience their customer service, and like they won't even, they're just like, holy shit, this is insane. I went to Paris and I've been to around Germany, and it's just not the same. Like, it really isn't. And it's like, and but the problem is that in the United States, we had a standard at one point and we left it, you know? And I think it started when people kind of took for granted people who serve. And then people who serve started saying, well, then go fuck yourself. You know, I don't need you either. And so everybody just kind of became very complacent towards the idea of service. Because, and then here comes 20 fucking 20, where everything's done digitally, you know, and done through a drive-through, where we've completely lost humanity. We don't have a face, we don't have a name, we don't have, we have, you know, order number, blah blah blah, and then, you know, and it's just ready at the gate, and you can pick it up. And it's, I understand the convenience, but I also understand how dehumanizing that is, you know, and how dangerous that can be for a society when you lose your humanity in basic transactions, you know, like when there's nobody to talk to with an online business. That's insane. Like, and everybody is just, you know, everybody gets freaked out because it's like, all I want is to just talk to somebody, and nobody can deliver that because, you know, the labor of that, you know, the cost of labor and whatever, but the bots and the AI aren't cutting it, you know?
It's like, on one hand, I understand, right, that things need to be outsourced and perhaps simplified to whatever version. But just even using my own, I've been trying to cancel my Uber one, and I can't get a fucking person to hold. So I found an email address. I email them and they're like, that's not our department. You need someone else. Good luck. Not even forward. And I'm like, I just want to, look, I'm at a point where I'm going to go to the bank right now and cancel the fucking payment.
Yeah.
But yeah, just speaking to, and how necessary it is. I feel that we're cycling back though to, incorrect wording. We're not cycling back. I think that we're at an extreme split off where people who have been real life people cycle back to wanting things more real life. And those who went on the wave of, you know, digital and not real, not actual contact, they go further down that.
Yeah. And they get what they get. Like, you can't complain that there's, you know, that it's such a cold experience, and that, not, you know, and it's sad because the people who fall into that trap, right? I mean, when they have no human contact, is they get very miserable, and then they wonder why. But it's like, look at all your habits. You're afraid to ask for ketchup for yourself. Like, you got to really level up here. Like, you know, it used to be that I'll just go ask so-and-so for some more ketchup. I'll be right back. And it was no big deal. And now it's like, well, my anxiety won't let me go ask for more ketchup. So instead, what I'm going to do is just hit ketchup 12 times when I order this thing online, you know? And it's like, and then they'll give you only 11. And then you're going to be sad about it. But there's no one you can talk to because this was all digital, you know? And it's just a robot fulfilling your fucking, your order. And it's like,
Can be like that. Right. Can we take that home with one insult and then close it off?
One insult?
Yeah. Yeah. So your fucking ancestors survived bisons, rape, pillaging. They moved to nations so you, as the grandchild, could have a great life, and here you are too fucking afraid to ask for fucking ketchup.
Well,
You are a disgrace.
You are a disgrace. Can I say one other thing, or are we wrapping up? Okay. To piggyback on that, whatever it is that you're going through in life, you're not the first and it's not the worst. So be cool and just work through it like any other puzzle. It's fine. You're still alive. You still got a chance.
There we go. And that was it for this week, motherfuckers. Fearless Wilt, Diamonds and Demons. See y'all next week.
All right.
Oh my
God. Into the episode.